I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, mate.
Frank, that was a quick answer. It was almost as if you were expecting me.
Indeed. Sorry about that just now.
No worries, mate. So how goes it in Corona lockdown partyville where you are?
I mean, it's weird. Do you know what I mean? Strange times. I went for a run earlier today and the park was rammed.
So right.
I don't think many people are taking it all that seriously.
Still.
But yeah, how are you?
I'm doing all right, mate. You know, it's a little bit financially tough because all my work, as you know, is the same with you, is based around live events and shows and gigs.
Yeah.
So all of that is gone for the foreseeable.
Spend a lot of many years working on getting people together, and now suddenly that's the one thing we're not allowed to do.
Did you have to cancel a bunch of shows? You had like a solo tour coming up, right?
I was in the middle of a tour, actually, and the last part of it that we actually did was one of the weirdest times I've ever had on tour, and not one that I'm in a hurry to relive. You know, the news started kind of snowballing, and we basically for 3 days in a row, every day, all day, me and my crew and my manager and my agent and everybody were just having discussions all day long about whether or not we should do the show that night. And we did three in the end, and then after the third one, it was just like, we need to stop doing this. It's not right. So we cancelled 5 shows in the end, which I'm really gutted about.
Is that a first for you?
I mean, it's the first time we've had to cancel shows for a pandemic, certainly.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I've cancelled shows here and there in the past, but it definitely it's a very strange time.
How were the shows that you did in the lead up to, you know, pulling the plug, those last few? Was there a weird vibe at the gigs?
There was, the first two of them, which were in Bath and Aylesbury, were both great, actually. We were monitoring the number of people showing up. Those shows sold out to about 1,600 people, and both nights we had about 1,500 people show up, which, given that you usually get a 10% drop of rate for a show anyway, it felt like a normal turnout, do you know what I mean? So, and on both of those days, I spent all day saying to myself, oh, we're going to have to cancel, and then got on stage and thought to myself, well, maybe not, because the vibe in the room, it wasn't even that the vibe was normal, there was a kind of sort of end-of-the-century party kind of euphoria to it.
Yeah, yeah.
But then the third show, which was in Southend, by that point, it really felt like the national conversation had changed, the turnout was much lower, and the vibe in the room wasn't. I mean, it was a cool show, I don't want to do it down, but like, it just felt like an end in some way, and straight after I came off the stage that night, I was like, we're calling the rest of the tour, it's got to stop.
What did you do the other night, though, that I saw? Because, you know, you're obviously a man who thinks on his feet and always has. Did you do, like, a live show online to raise some money for your crew, basically, and then didn't that go incredibly well?
It did, yeah. I mean, the funny thing is that the bill for the tour was me, it was my wife, Jess, and then my friend Michael Schnabel, who's from Ohio, and Micah and his partner Vanessa were staying at mine for a few days in the aftermath of the tour as they were trying to figure out what to do. So the touring bill was in my front room anyway. Facebook live streaming is actually really easy to do, so I set up a fundraiser on GoFundMe, and it occurred to me, you know, I can't do a fundraiser to save the live music industry. That's biting off more than I can chew. But what I can do immediately is help out the people who've had my back for a decade or more, and I'm talking about the musicians in my band,
yeah,
my live crew, all that kind of thing. So I decided to do a fundraiser for them, and yeah, we raised about 44 grand, which is insane, and is actually really going to tide those people over through this period of time, which I feel really good about. I'm now thinking about what the next kind of thing that I can do in terms of further live streaming or whatever, in terms of raising funds for venues or, you know, for food banks or all this kind of thing. There's a lot of kind of worthy causes out there right now. And, of course, you know, it's tough times economically for everybody, so I'm not sure quite how much money I can milk out of my audience time and time again. But, you know, you want to do what you can.
Amen, brother. Well, let's break for our first of five songs, and then we'll come back and talk some more. The tracks you've picked, obviously, is in the context of, although it very much is not the end of the world, it feels like it, so I thought we'd have some fun. We'd have some fun with it. The first song you've chosen, I mean, this absolutely embodies everybody's life right now, Joy Division, Isolation. I don't even think we need to explain the reason for this one.
I find it difficult to choose, but if you put a gun against my head, I would choose the therapy version of that song. They covered it on their album Trouble Gum, which came out in 1994, is one of my absolute signpost records growing up. So that's the version that I would choose to put on first, personally. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's a pretty obvious choice, but we are all living in the isolation days right now.
Just to kind of flip the narrative real quick, we'll come back to everything that's going on and try and make some sense of it all if we can. What's going on with you and Fat Mike? I keep seeing this back and forth on Instagram, and there's always moments of joy in times like this, and one that I'm enjoying at the moment is the back and forth over Instagram between you and Mike. What's going on there?
Well, we have some plans, and I can't really say any more about it just yet.
But, got you.
We have some plans that predate the coronavirus pandemic. But obviously now the two of us are kind of sat at home with not much to do, so we are spending our spare time taking the piss out of each other on Instagram posts. But there's news coming. That's all I can say.
Amazing. So there's always hope. There's always something to look forward to. And yeah. I mean, that guy, his kitchen, first of all, looks like something out of like a 50s sci-fi movie with all the mint green cabinets. And then he's got these wieners and he's like, oh, maybe I'll turn them. Simple but effective.
I think I just out-punned him just now. I did one about a fat microphone.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet. I'll have to check that.
Well, have a look. I literally posted it about 10 minutes before we had this chat.
I absolutely love it. So your partner, is she a full-time musician? What does she do for a living? How's this affected her?
Jess has been an actress. These days she is studying to be a psychotherapist and working as a teacher in the interim. Like a private tutor kind of vibe. Her income has taken a huge hit on that level as well. I think that as time goes by, that will level out a bit as people get more into the idea of kind of Skype lessons and that kind of thing. But it's a worrying time for her as much as for anybody else. We definitely are both people who exist in the world of self-employment. The first draft of government announcements about helping people out didn't include the likes of us. It's challenging times.
It certainly is. How are you counteracting the boredom at home? What are your top tips to stay sane?
I've got a couple of projects on the go, one of which is that I read incessantly anyway, and I always have a big pile of books that I'm planning on reading at any given time, and there's a couple of really quite weighty tomes on that list that I tend to shy away from that I'm actually now making myself read. So at the moment, I'm knee-deep in an agrarian history of Russia in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, which is pretty dry, I've got to tell you. But I'm learning many things from it that I didn't know, so that's cool. And then, I mean, my other project at the moment is that I'm writing songs for my next record anyway, so I'm just kind of like cracking on with that. One of the things that I'm finding very useful at the moment looking forward is that, I don't know about you, I'm somebody who operates very well with deadlines.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I think that we now live at a point in time where you have to set yourself deadlines. Because there's so much time. I'm looking at an absolute minimum of 6 weeks sitting on my ass at home, and like I don't think I've ever done that before, and it's very easy for me to do nothing at all and just try and complete Netflix or whatever. I think it's really important to set yourself goals and set yourself deadlines for the creative things that you want to do if you are a creative person. I think it's important also at the same time to not like be overly hard on yourself. I think it's important to allow yourself the leeway to have days where you don't get much done, because if you beat yourself up about it, that's counterproductive. But at the same time, for me to actually finish stuff, if I say to myself, I need to get 3 songs finished this week, for example, that's helpful to me in terms of pushing me forward to actually do things.
Good advice. Good, solid advice, my friend. Okay, we're going to break for another track. And I wouldn't have had this artist down as one of your selections. I'd love to know why. She's an absolute powerhouse of a performer, one of the all-time great artists. Love this song as well. Nina Simone, I Ain't Got No. How come this one made the cut, Frank? What does it mean to you personally?
I've just always been an enormous Nina Simone fan, as long as I can remember, really. I think that she's such a remarkable human. There's an amazing documentary about her online, What Happened, Miss Simone, which is very sad, actually. You know, the end of her life was not particularly rosy. But she was just, a classically trained pianist, one of the best songwriters of all time, an incredible performer. And this song in particular is one of my absolute go-to kind of pick-me-up songs if I'm feeling down in the dumps. It's just such a joyous explosion of feeling and of like lust for life, to coin a phrase. It always picks me up when I'm down.
So what you're saying is triumph in the face of adversity.
Exactly. You know, and it's a list of the things that she doesn't have, and the chorus line is, I ain't got no, but I've got life.
I ain't got no home, ain't got no shoes, ain't got no money, ain't got no class, ain't got no skirts, ain't got no sweater, ain't got no perfume, ain't got no bed, ain't got no mind, ain't got no mother, ain't got
got no culture, ain't got no friends, ain't got no schooling, ain't got no love, ain't got no name, ain't got no ticket, ain't got no token, ain't got no God. And what about God? Why am I alive anyway? Yeah, what about God? Nobody can take away. Got my hair, got my head, got my brains, got my ears, got my eyes, got my nose, got my mouth, I got my smile. I got my tongue, got my chin, got my neck, got my boots, got my heart, got my soul, got my back, I got my sex. I got my arms, got my hands, got my fingers, got my legs, got my feet, got my toes, got my liver, got my blood, I've got life, I got my freedom, I've got life, I've got life, and I'm gonna keep it, I've got life, and nobody's gonna take it away, I've got life.
Again, to kind of flip the tone, what do you see as being the positive of this situation right now, things that we can take from it that are a positive, things that will come out of it that are perhaps positive? Do you see, you know, any good things on the horizon? Obviously, the immediate financial impact is going to be devastating. Yeah. There's no way of candy coating that. But if there is, if there is a silver lining, what would it be, you reckon?
People are suffering and people are dying, and I think it's really important to bear that in mind. It's funny because, like, numbers currently are quite low and it can all feel quite distant and not real, but it is real and people are not well, and I think we need to bear that in mind. And it's also really early days, so it's very hard to tell what's going to come out of all of this on a societal or indeed a personal level. Two things that spring to mind, though, on a positive angle is that, first of all, I mean, I tend to be somebody who's incredibly busy all the time, and that is the way that I want to be, it's the way that I choose to be, but at the same time, I'm not hating having a bit of enforced kind of slowing down of pace. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, man.
Taking the time to just enjoy the company of my wife and my cat and my house and get little things done around the house and indeed read, like I was saying. I'm not hating that. I'm very cautious about making the next statement, but, like, I do think, you know, we've all grown up in a society that's very kind of individually focused, and I think the fact that we're now living through something that's forcing everybody to be slightly more kind of communally focused is not necessarily a terrible thing. I mean, my own view of history, as I understand it, is that, like, you have to be very careful of communal activity in the sense that when it becomes forced, it's a terrible thing. Nevertheless, I think something that makes us all think about something greater than just ourselves for a little while is not a terrible thing.
Yeah, and you do see it happening, don't you? You see an awareness of the other person and other people's needs beyond our own, which, as you say, has kind of characterized probably the last 20 years, I would say. Like, the large part of my life, I kind of perceive to be, as you say, a very isolationist, self-driven, greedy in many ways narrative.
Yeah, I think just sort of considering, I hesitate to call it positive, but one of the interesting things about the fact of a pandemic is that it's very leveling. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't really matter who you are. Tom fucking Hanks has got it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's wealth is no protector. And I think that, I've been reading a lot of articles today, actually, about what's happening for the homeless in London, which is initially is heartbreaking in the sense that it's very difficult to see how these people are integrated into the measures being put forward. But people are starting to think about people like that in a way that feels more human, and that's a good thing.
What have you been reading in regards to the homeless problem in London? Anything concrete, or is it?
A few articles that I've seen posted up online. I mean, I have to say, I'm doing my best to stay away from the time-wasting corners of the internet and to not spend my time on Facebook too much.
Yeah, yeah.
It seems, that's the thing I try to do anyway, but particularly right now, there's a lot of kind of people, the devil makes work for idle hands, you know, and there's a lot of people talking a lot of shit.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to, for my own mental health and benefit, trying to stay away from that kind of thing. But I stumbled across some interesting articles this morning.
Who are your sort of closest circle of friends? And, you know, obviously you don't have to name them, but how are you staying in touch with people beyond your household? What's your preferred method of communication?
I feel like I'm living in the age of endless WhatsApp groups. There's about 1,000 new ones started in the last however long. You know, me and my band and touring crew have a WhatsApp group where we chat to each other and everybody's checking on everybody else. And beyond that, just been texting friends and seeing how they're doing and trying to FaceTime my family and see how my mum is. And I have a new niece who is 4 weeks old and see how she's doing. And stuff like that, you know, just, I mean, we are fortunate that this is happening in an age where the technology is such that we can have things like FaceTime and Skype and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it makes it a lot more bearable, even just in terms of the entertainment at our fingertips as well, not just the communication, right, but the ability to listen to any song ever written or, you know, rent any movie ever made. That kind of makes things pretty cushy, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
This next guy... ASAP, I'm going to sound like a total granddad here, Frank. How am I pronouncing it? I was going to say ASAP Rocky,
Rock.
But it's certainly not him.
No, ASAP Rock. He's a rapper from the States. I couldn't tell you where he's from, actually. And my knowledge and awareness of hip-hop is incredibly limited, and I don't for a minute want to sound like I know what I'm talking about when I talk about that genre. But I had a bit of a taste in the world of kind of the more kind of progressive end of hip-hop a few years back, stuff like... LP and Odd Nose Dam and Doze One and those kind of people. And Aesop Rock kind of exists on the fringes of that team, as I understand it, but I might be wrong about that. He has a record called Labor Days, which is an absolute masterpiece. And what I love about Aesop Rock is that, in contrast to quite a lot of the very successful modern rappers, and I'm sure you know who I'm talking about, his subject matter is not himself.
Yeah.
You know?
And his ego and his... bravado,
yeah,
and his bullshit. Yeah,
I had a thing a couple of years ago. I realized I'd never listened to any Kanye West songs, so I sat down and listened to a couple of records of his, and I was blown away by the production, and the presentation was incredible. But I just found his subject matter utterly tedious, because
he
ever rapped about it himself, and I don't care very much about that. Whereas Aesop Rock, he's a genuine storyteller, and he does it in the medium of incredibly tight, brilliant rhymes. And I find that, as somebody who writes lyrics myself, I find it kind of intimidating, in the sense that, like, the density of his art is unbelievable.
Wow, such is the level of respect. That's how high it is.
Yeah, definitely. And, I mean, I think this song, Lucy, is a really good example of it. It's just an incredibly brilliant story. And it's an uplifting story, and a very interesting story about what it is we do with our lives and what we leave behind and all that kind of thing. But it's, you know, I if I could write like that, I would. Let's just say that.
Yo, ask her. Hey, Lucy, come here. Eyes cut it. Lucy.
She didn't hear you, yo. Ask her. Hey,
how old are you?
Wore a head of blue barrettes. City born into this world with no knowledge and no regrets. Had a piece of yellow chalk with which she drew up on the street. The many faces of the various locals that she would meet.
There was Joshua, age 10.
Bully up the block who always took her milk money at the morning bus stop.
There was Mrs. Crabtree and her poodle.
She always gave a wave and holler on her weekly trip down to the bingo parlor.
And she drew
men, women, kids, sunsets, clouds.
And she drew
skyscrapers, fruit stands, cities, towns. Always said hello to passersby. They asked her why she passed the time attaching lines of concrete, but she would only smile. Now all the other children living in or near her building ran around like tyrants, soaking up the open fire hydrants, they would say,
"Hey, little Lucy, wanna come jump double dutch?"
Lucy would pause, look, grin, and say,
"I'm busy, thank you much."
Well, well, 1 year passed, and believe it or not, she covered every last inch of the entire sidewalk, and she stopped.
Lucy, after all this, you're just giving in today?
She said, "I'm not giving in, I'm finished."
And walked away.
Wait, one, two, three, that's the speed of the sea. A, B, C, that's the speed of the D. You could dream a little dream, and you could live a little dream. I'd rather live it. The dream is always chased, but never get it. One, two, three, that's the speed of the sea. A, B, C, that's the speed of the D.
Introverted somewhat. Basement apartment in the same building she grew up in.
She
traded in her blueberettes for long locks, held up with a clip, traded in her yellow chalk for charcoal sticks.
And she drew
little Bobby, who would come to sweep the porch.
And she drew
the mailman, delivered every day at 4. Lucy had very little contact with the folks outside our cubicle day, but found it suitable and she liked it that way.
She had a man now,
Rico,
similar,
Herman. They would only see each other once or twice a week on purpose. They appreciated space and Rico was an artist too, so they'd connect on Saturdays to share the pictures that they drew.
Look,
now every month or so, she'd get a knock upon the front door, just one of the neighbors. Acting nice, but thought she was a strange girl, really said.
Hey, Lucy, wanna join me for some lunch?
Lucy would smile and say,
I'm busy, thank you much.
The neighbor'd make a weird face the second the door shut, then run and tell her friends that truly crazy Lucy was. And Lucy knew what people thought, but didn't care, cause while they spread their rumors through the streets, she made another masterpiece.
1, 2, 3, that's the speed of the sea. ABC, that's the speed of the D. You could dream a little dream, or you could live a little dream, I'd rather live it. Dreamers always chase, but never get it. 1, 2, 3, that's the speed of the sea. ABC, that's the speed of the D. You could dream a little dream, or you could live a little dream, I'd rather live it.
Lucy was 87, upon a deathbed at the senior home where she had previously checked in. Traded in the locks and clip for a headrest, traded in the charcoal sticks for arthritis, it had to happen.
And she drew no more,
just sat and watched the dawn. Had a television in the room that she'd never turned on. Lucy pinned up a life's worth of pictures on the wall and sat and smiled and looked each one over just to laugh at it all. Now Rico, he had passed about 5 years back, so the visiting hours pulled in a big flock of nothing. She never spoken much throughout the spanning of her life until the day she leaned forward, grinned and pulled the nurse aside and she said,
look, I've never had a dream in my life, because a dream is what you want to do but still haven't pursued. I knew what I wanted and did it till it was done, so I've been the dream that I wanted to be since day one.
Well, the nurse jumped back. She never heard Lucy even talk, especially words like that. She walked over to the door and pulled it closed behind. Then Lucy blew a kiss to each one of her pictures and she died.
1, 2, 3, that's the speed of the sea. ABC, that's the speed of the D. You can dream a little dream or you can live a little dream. I'd rather live it, cause dreamers always chase but never get it. 1, 2, 3, that's the speed of the sea.
In terms of the new material, how far along are you, if you can share anything in regards to that?
A little bit. I've got 12 or 13 songs, depending on what kind of mood I'm in about the last one, that are finished right now. I'm as I do with every record, trying out a different stylistic avenue. It's a little bit early for me to say exactly what that constitutes, but I think that it's going to pleasantly surprise a lot of people. Just trying something slightly different, I'm excited about it.
In terms of subject matter?
Well, that's an interesting one, because, like, prior to this week or last week, I was sort of, you know, my last record was a history record. Before that, I wrote a kind of social record, for want of a better term, and be more kind. I sort of wanted to get back to more just idiosyncratic and personal songwriting, so there are tunes about my life and things I'm thinking about, but also, like, I'm really into stuff like the way that John Cage writes about things like a guy who saw Bigfoot or a drunk explorer in a bar, like very specific little word portraits of a situation, and I was kind of going down that road. I have to say that right now, trying to write, you know, this week, it's quite difficult to think about anything other than what's happening in the world right now.
I can imagine, yeah.
I suspect that, you know, I'm not sure that the world is going to need 10,000 records about a pandemic in 6 months' time. You know what I mean? Like, I have things to say about it on some levels, but again, it's really early days. Like I was saying, and like there is some value in reactive songwriting, but if you want something that's going to kind of endure, then that's not always the best approach. So I'm in two minds about how much of that is going to make it into my songs.
This might sound like a bit of a lofty, quaffy question, but as somebody who likes to kind of dissect the world through the brain of a songwriter, if that makes sense, like you make sense of the world around you through your ability sometimes to process them as stories and as statements. When you're going through something like this, does the artistic side of your brain creep in, or are you with something like this, because it is so early on and it is so wild and weird and new, are you just trying to process it as like a rational human? Does that make sense?
It does, absolutely. The songwriting part of my brain never sleeps, and there's definitely a part of me that sort of tries to, whether I want to or not, or whether consciously or not, sort of starts kind of toying with couplets when I'm trying to formulate my thoughts. But in a situation like this, more often than not, those couplets that arise are generally quite naff, if you know what I mean, or at least kind of crude, should we say. You know, it's difficult. Like I say, the situation's changing every single day right now, and I think that you know, a snappy couplet about how things were like last week is already out of date. But I guess it helps me process it in the sense that the art of songwriting is distillation in many ways, and trying to kind of figure out what it is I'm thinking and feeling, and that method is not a terrible thing. It's just the question is whether or not I need to share that with anybody.
Obviously, a couple of the big festivals have pulled. Glastonbury, Slam Dunk the other day, said they're postponing, not pulling. But, you know, you have to only imagine, I'm not asking you to comment on it, but you have to only imagine that most of the summer is going to be dry of anything, isn't it, at this stage?
Yeah, I mean, it's very hard to see how and when this ends, you know. I mean, there are certainly things that one can read which are quite pessimistic about that, in the sense that, you know, I don't know when we're going to kind of pass a peak or whatever, and I don't know when our health service is going to be able to cope with everyone just going outside and acting like normal, and will we ever go back to normal and all this kind of shit. I mean, I've no idea, and it's very worrying as somebody who, as I was saying at the beginning, who's made their living gathering people in rooms as their method of making a living in the past.
Will you be embracing the technological side of performance more, like what you did with the fundraiser, even if it's just for, you know, shows here and there? Is that something you're toying with?
I mean, the thing is, like, that's all well and good as a stopgap thing. I'm pleased to say, in the long run, that the act of watching a show on your computer, because I've been watching some of the other people's live streams, is not the same as being at a gig.
Yeah.
In the long run, I'm quite pleased about that, because they've made every other aspect of my life downloadable. So if they make that one downloadable too, then I'm fucked. You know, there is a power in a room full of people coming together for a common purpose, and that's the thing that I have made the business of my adult life and my living and all the rest of it, and I don't think the live stream is a substitute for that, thankfully, in the long run. I mean, in the short term, I'm thinking of ways of kind of doing more live streams that aren't repetitive and that have other angles to them. I guess we'll see, you know, I've got time to think about it.
Yeah, man. Well, we should maybe toy up with an idea. If we do end up bunkered down for ages, we could do a little joint Instagram live Q&A or something, or talking through your songs.
Yeah, I just did an Instagram live joint chat thing just now and was staggered by how good the technology was.
Yeah, Miley Cyrus, have you seen her stuff? She's doing like a full-blown daily talk show from her house with all these huge name guests, and the production values on it is insane. And you're like, wow, I guess it does kind of show you really the potential and possibility of this thing that you hold in your hand. It's nuts. But as you say, it's not the same, and it never will be the same as that real-life gathering. Thank God.
Yeah, no, totally.
So is this next dude, is he Stephen Van Zandt's son? What's the relationship here? Van Zandt.
No, the great Townes Van Zandt. No, he's not related to Steve Van Zandt directly, as far as I know. Townes Van Zandt is the songwriter's password. I have his initials tattooed on my wrist with a key next to them for that reason. If you meet a songwriter who doesn't know who Townes Van Zandt is, in my opinion, they tend to not know what the fuck they're talking about.
Got you.
He was one of the absolute greats. He was active in the late 60s and through the 70s and the 80s. He died in the 90s. He lived a very tragic life. He was one of those people who clearly found life a challenge, you know, and he battled addiction and alcoholism and all these other things, and never found a huge amount of success in his own lifetime, but his legend has gone on after his death. He's one of the absolute great songwriters of all time. I have some of his lyrics tattooed in my back as well, in fact. And indeed, the song I chose, To Live Is To Fly, right?
To Live Is To Fly, yeah, beautiful song title in today's world.
It's, Yeah, and I would, if we're being specific about this, I would love you to use the version that's taken from the live album called Live at the Old Quarter. Towns suffered in the sense that his recorded output, studio output, was quite often badly arranged. He quite often had producers kind of sticking nap instruments over the top, but there are a whole bunch of recordings of him playing solo live that are absolutely pristine and unimprovable. And in fact, I would vote for Live at the Old Quarter by Townes Van Zandt as being one of my all-time favorite records. I certainly have listened to it more times than I can remember. But yes, The Living Supply, I mean, it's a beautiful, simple, perfect piece of songwriting. What is it? He says, days up and down they come like rain on a conga drum. Forget most, remember some, but don't turn none away. It's perfect, you know, and it's a beautiful piece of music.
Play this song called To Live's To Fly. Won't say I love you, babe. Won't say I need you, babe. But I'm gonna get you, babe, and I will not do you wrong. Living's mostly wasting time, and I waste my share of mine. But it never feels too good, so let's don't take too long. Well, you're soft as glass, and I'm a gentleman. And we got the sky to talk about, and the world to lie upon. Days up and down they come, like rain on a conga drum. Forget most, remember some, but don't turn none away. Everything is not enough, and nothing is too much to bear. Where you've been is good and gone, all you keep is the getting there. Well, to live's to fly, all low and high. So shake the dust off of your wings and the sleep out of your eyes. It's goodbye to all my friends. It's time to go again. But think all the poetry and the picking down the line. I'll miss the system here. The bottom's low and the treble's clear. But it don't pay to think too much on things you leave behind. Well, it may be gone, but it won't be long. I'll be a-bringing back the melody and the rhythm that I find. We all got holes to fill, and them holes are all as real. And some fall on you like a storm, sometimes you dig your own. But choice is yours to make, and time is yours to take. Some dive into the sea, some toil upon the stone. Well, to live's to fly, all low and high. So shake the dust off of your wings and the sleep out of your eyes. Well, shake the dust off of your wings and the tears out of your eyes.
You know, what I found really interesting about doing these is the insight into people's personalities and tastes and influences. And obviously, because the context of it is, it's the end of the world. So it really does give a specific focus on, you know, the choices, why you're choosing them because of that reason. And it does make you think, doesn't it, about the songs that truly mean something to you.
Absolutely. I certainly think that Live at the Old Quarter is a record that they would put on if somebody told them the apocalypse was happening in 45 minutes time.
So have you ever done a live record, Frank?
We've released Live at Wembley is out there. We did Live at Union Chapel. We've done a few here and there. I sort of have slightly mixed feelings about live records in general, simply because on some levels, one of the things that attracts me about live performances and art form is that it's ephemeral. You know, you had to be in the room, you had to be there, and listening to a recording, however well mixed, is not the same as being at the show. And if you really enjoy the show, I mean, there's a bunch of companies now that do this thing where you can get like a mix of the show that you've just been to on a CD as you leave.
Yeah, like a USB stick of the gig, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's awful. I think it's
yeah.
Personally. You know, that's not what you experience. What you experience was the communal magic of being in a room with a group of people and the give and take of energy and the reverberation off the walls and all the rest of it. And a USB stick of something that's been mixed in a truck out front is not that. So, you know, I'm slightly dubious about that. I mean, you know, every now and again you have a show that's kind of magic in its way. As I say, like when we did Show 2000, came out recently, actually, that was a special evening. And indeed, I have another live record in the works right now. We're working on the next as we speak, so more news on that soon. But generally speaking, I prefer a show to a live album.
I had Jay over to my house a few weeks back to do a podcast with him, which you kindly, you know, set up, I guess, on the boat, on the Floggy Molly boat, which was the last time we saw each other under circumstances which could not be any more different, like on the boat in the middle of the Bahamas. So locked up in our bedrooms. But I sat down with Jay. We went for almost 2 hours in the end. It was a great chat, and we spoke a lot about that Wembley show and the lead up to that, and, you know, just as a statement, that one night and event, and how special it was, and how, you know, Jay's just, you know, in awe really of what you achieved with that. And you did a little film about him, right? You wanted to just make a film about Beans on Toast, his road to Wembley.
Somebody was making a long form documentary, which is out there somewhere, called The Road to Wembley. Greg Nolan made that film, which is kind of 40 minute little thing about me getting to Wembley and how I got there and all the rest of it. And I thought it'd be funny to make a my own little documentary called Beans on Toast, Road to Wembley. So that morning of the show, I went to his house and woke him up, and me and my buddy Josh Burdett basically got the tube with him to Wembley, and that was it. And it was about 10 minutes long. I think it's on YouTube.
So here's one thing I want to kind of pick up on before we say goodbye. Do you think, I kind of predict yes, and I'm going to hope that this happens, when, you know, gigs happen again and people are out at shows again, because we've spoken about this before and the tendency of a lot of people to film shows and record them. Do you think that having had the gig kind of experience taken away, that people then when they get back into them might just be like, I'm not filming this, I'm experiencing this, like I want to be in the moment, let's have it.
I would hope so, right? Yeah, I would certainly hope so. I mean, the whole thing with filming a gig, I know that there are bands who kind of put signs around the venue and try and ban it or talk to the crowd about it. That's not quite my take on it, in the sense that, like, on some levels, people can do what they want. They paid their money. My thought is about when I see, you know, phones rather than faces when I look out, it's just that it's a shame for that person, you know? Like, they're missing out. And, like, to pick a slightly left-field example, immediately after playing the Olympics back in 2012, I'm just dropping that name. I went and walked the South Downs Way, which is an old Saxon walking path in Hampshire and in Sussex. I walked from Winchester to Beachy Head on my own. I did it on my own. I didn't take any kind of camera with me, and I didn't take any photos, and I didn't use my phone in any way during that period of time, because I just wanted to experience it, you know, and I have memories of it, and those memories are very dear to me, and I think that they're more vivid because they're not kind of polluted in a way by photographs. And I do think that, like, some people lose sight of that, you know. The best thing you can do is just experience something as it happens and cherish that memory. You might hope that people might get more of a sense of that after this calamity that we're going through right now, but whether or not they will, time will tell.
It's funny as well, because obviously for a lot of people right now, the phone is the only lifeline to the outside world. Well, for everyone, it is the lifeline to that. But I was chatting to Dom Jolly for one of these the other day, and he was saying, actually, one of the positives of this whole thing, which I'm sure you found with your wife as well, is just genuine quality time at home with your family, that when you're out and about hustling and working and touring all the time, you don't necessarily get to enjoy. And so actually,
absolutely,
that's been really beneficial, I think, for a lot of homes, is that bonding and that socializing.
Yeah, completely. I mean, I'm doing quite a lot of just leaving my phone downstairs and you know, going and sort of hanging out in other rooms of my house and reading or working on music without having my phone next to me all the time. And I'm really enjoying that.
Love it. Well, listen, mate, uncertain times are ahead for sure. But I'm sure the better days are also not too far away as well. I appreciate you taking the time to chat. It's always a pleasure. And here's hoping we see each other at a you know, a live event in the not too distant future.
In person and not over the phone, that would be lovely.
What are we going to play out with then, Frank? A band so good they just called themselves The Band.
Yeah, well, quite. I mean, you know, I'm an atheist, but if there was ever any proof of the existence of God, it might be that there could only ever have been one band called The Band, and it turned out to be the only band in history who were good enough to actually deserve that appellation. So, you know, at the very least, there's some serious serendipity there. I love The Band. I adore them. The Last Waltz is one of the greatest pieces of art ever made by humans. This doesn't really have any connection to the end of the world, per se. It's one of my favourite bits of music ever, is the live version of The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down from The Last Waltz.
Amazing. Well, personal connections are what make music so powerful and magical, and exactly that, personal to the individual. Dude, thanks so much for a great chat, great song selections.
And
take care of yourself, dude. Much love.
Stay safe and healthy.
And I look forward to hearing what's going to be going on with you and Fat Mike soon. I'm excited about that.
It's coming soon. It's coming,
right? All the best, bud. Nice one, Frank.
Thanks, mate.
What you need and you leave the rest, but they should never have taken the very best. The night they drove old Dixie down, when all the bells were ringing, the night they drove old Dixie down, and all the people were singing. The bells are ringing, the night they go, oh,
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.